you could win free Coney's, Cholitos, and more at your local Skyline Chili. Head into Skyline, grab a Skyline Fest game piece, and peel for a chance to win instantly. At participating Skyline locations while supplies last. Game ends August 24th.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 250 of your favourite Formula One show. Yes, Jamie and I return, knowing Wheel is back. Of course, now we're into the depths of the summer break, we get to celebrate our quarter century. And Jamie, we're going to celebrate our quarter century with something hopefully that you guys are going to help us out with. Before we forget, we want to do a Q&A in the next couple of weeks, of course, because the podcast has now hit 1,000 subscribers. Obviously, if you've got any questions about Formula One that you want us to answer, or any controversial opinions about Formula One you want us to answer, or kind of what Jamie's romantic life is looking like,
don't
anything.
Ask about that would be a very short answer.
But I feel like we're going to say, obviously, up to a certain point, we're going to be a fairly open book with it. So, yeah, anything you kind of want to know about the podcast or Formula One or us, or make sure you leave them down in the comments below, because hopefully we're going to do this in the next couple of weeks, because it gives us an extra podcast we can do during F1's fairly quiet summer break, it feels like, this year.
Exactly.
Doesn't it, Jamie?
And also, you know, the podcast will be going 5 years or 4.5 years, so and we
have
not done
one
yet.
Years. No, we haven't.
1,000 people have decided we're worth watching, so why not tell a bit more about ourselves?
Yeah, exactly. Nothing screams self-indulgent like
exactly.
Asking questions so we can talk about ourselves for the better part of an hour. But yeah, so make sure, obviously, if you've got any questions, leave them down in the comments below. We wanted to get that out there nice and early in the show, because otherwise we knew we'd forget come the end of the podcast. But today, then, we're going to be looking at our seven-ish rookies of the 2025 campaign, despite the fact three of them had already made starts, or four of them actually had already made starts prior to 2025. We're going to be going through, we're going to be talking about them all individually, and then we're going to be ranking them at the end of the episode. And of course, you know, to help with the clickbait, we've also got a tier list to rank them in, but it's going to be more of a ranking 1 through 7, isn't it? I think the tier list just helps A, get people clicking on the video, and B, kind of, we can create bigger gaps, can't we, rather than just doing 1 through 7, can't we,
exactly.
Jamie? Where do we want to start, then? Do we want to start with Jack Doohan, of course, our rookie that is often forgotten in 2025?
Yeah.
He's been included in our social polls, but yeah, hasn't obviously made a Formula One start now since Miami.
Yeah, that was a very brief cameo in Miami before Liam Lawson took him out in turn one, but we'll get onto him later. Yeah, Jack Doohan was, we were talking pre-show, Helmut Marko did this tier list before the season started, where he called Antonelli and Behrman A tier and Hadjar A tier, I think. And he called Doohan C tier and said he won't see out the season. So we are today being Helmut Marko, but with a bit more information.
It's always scary. Yeah, a bit more information and hopefully slightly less racism.
Yes, and a bit more mental capacity, probably at this point. Jack Doohan is gone, obviously, so Helmut Marko was actually right for a change. And he really didn't do much, did he? It was a weird one, because if he didn't have Franco Colapinto breathing down his neck, he probably would have seen out the season. But Flavio Briatore, back in January, he had already decided that for any reason he could find, Colapinto was taking that seat.
Yeah, it's always been a bit, you know, we like we said, but Doohan was never going to get a fair shot, was he? We knew that going in. We knew unless he did something miraculous that it wasn't going to happen. And ultimately, I mean, it's going to be, obviously, when we get talking about Colapinto as well in just a moment, you could make the argument that neither of them have really done a better job than the other. In fact, if you actually look at the qualifying average deficit to Gasly, Doohan was actually doing better at the start of the year. Now, I know, of course, he was helped a little bit with the fact that he had pre-season testing and everything else, but yeah, he was, on average, I believe, the gap is about 0.16 seconds. Colo Pinto is, on average, quarter of a second off Pierre Gasly throughout all their sessions together. Mm. So, Doohan, in many regards, I mean, they've each had a best result of 13th. Colo Pinto's had two of them. Doohan only had the one, but of course, Colo Pinto's had more races as well.
Doohan's one also was by virtue of three disqualifications at China.
It was also helped by three DSQs. but, I mean, yeah, it's one of those weird ones, isn't it? Because, like, obviously, we kind of always look at recency bias, don't we, in Formula 1. And I think it's very, very easy now to kind of say, oh, you know, Doohan wasn't that bad. And I don't think he was that bad. But I also, you're kind of there going, you don't think had he started somewhere else that he'd be suddenly looking at an illustrious F1 career either, would you?
No, exactly.
It always seemed like a weird move coming in.
It felt like a panic move, because obviously after Monaco last year, 2024, they basically decided they weren't having Ocon for the following season. But then because Alpine were in such a terrible state last year, absolutely nobody wanted to go to them. No. So they were waiting for signs, he didn't come, they wanted Bottas for a bit, he didn't fancy it. You know, in the end, they just had to stick Doohan in there. And it wasn't ideal. And then only after they stuck Doohan in, I think they announced that as Spa, didn't they? They announced Doohan for 25.
About then, yeah.
And then obviously Colo Pinto comes into Williams like two races later and starts doing really well. They're like, oh, let's snap him up.
I mean, even saying Colo Pinto was doing really well, he had a couple of flashes of brilliance as well, didn't he? But this season's kind of been more of, I think a lot of people remember the points that Colo Pinto was able to score. I think it was Baku and, was it Vegas? Baku and Monza, wasn't it? Sorry.
Yeah.
And people kind of remember those results rather than the multiple crashes in Brazil, the crash in Vegas, and just kind of some of the more lackluster results. This was something else I was thinking about, Jamie. And I mean, you're more of a Pierre Gasly fan than I am. I feel like we've seen next to nothing of Pierre's face this year. Like, I feel like I've not seen him anywhere. Not even just in the races, but I mean just generally in Formula 1. Like, he's been quietly pocketed his teammate, but I think where Alpine have been usually the worst team.
Yeah,
we just haven't seen Pierre Gasly. And he's fairly well rated up and down the grid.
And he's still all right. Like, the Silverstone would have been a really like headline result had it not been for Hülkenberg on the podium in sixth place in the Alpine. Yeah. So he is doing well. It's obviously helped by the fact he's going against children. but yeah, he's doing a fine job. The thing is, Gasly is rated, but it's not like Sainz in the midfield where you think he's a, you know, multiple race winner. He's a bit of a Jenson Button if you got in the right car at the right time. I don't think Gasly is quite as highly rated as someone like Sainz.
No, it's one of those things, isn't it? It's one of those things, isn't it, where you're kind of a bit worried that Gasly might be going down the Romain Grosjean route. Yeah, you get a few podiums here and there. I mean, obviously, I know Gasly's had a win that Grosjean never got. But you're kind of there going, is he just quietly going to slip out at some point with a career that's kind of remembered for one of those moments? I mean, you really highly rated him coming in, didn't you?
I did. Well, he was GT2 champion back in the day. He was, and you know, he's been in F1 and he's had a very good career already, to be honest. Must be in his 10th.
This is what I mean. You're kind of there going, could we end up seeing Gasly off the grid in a couple of years without kind of realising?
Well, he's 29, so, but the whole grid is quite old. I think Sainz is the whole grid is quite young. So 29 makes him like the fifth oldest driver, I think, or something like that. I think he'll be around for another 5 years at least, but he's one of those where, like, if the new rookies come in and start doing really well, a bit like in Nico Hülkenberg, Kevin Magnussen type, where they're good, but if a team decides they don't want him, is anyone else going to pick them up? I'm talking about in 2019, 2021, when Magnussen went. So, but then both those drivers came back, so you don't know.
No, it is a very, very weird one, isn't it? I mean, it's also not the topic of conversation for today, so I apologise for sidetracking us. I mean, yeah, like we said for Doohan, though, there were some flashes that he was getting better, of course. Australia started out pretty badly. But, of course, you know, Sainz made a similar mistake lap one. Antonelli almost made a similar mistake. Alonso obviously binned it as well. So it was kind of forgivable up to a certain point. But again, just gave Flavio Briatore a bit more ammunition. Like you said, Shanghai wasn't fantastic. I feel like he was involved in an incident that wasn't his fault, though, in Shanghai, if I'm remembering correctly. I feel like someone did something stupid to him, which cost him. Obviously, Japan, the high-profile moment, of course, where he tried to take turn one with DRS open, which was not ideal, which, alarmingly, is probably what he's going to be remembered for. Bahrain, again, he was actually looking quite good, but then just the safety car timing completely screwed him.
But the Alpine was also quite quick that race.
The Alpine was very good that weekend. Yeah, and then obviously Jeddah as well. I think Alpine just struggled there as well because, again, it's such a power-sensitive circuit that they were always going to be on the back foot. And then, of course, yeah, like you said, Miami, nothing he could really do. He just got Liam Lawson at turn one after out-qualifying Gasly.
Yeah, so what was it, 5-1 in quali and a 6-0 in the races? Or I guess he technically beat Gasly when he retired and got disqualified, but 4-0 in races they both finished.
Yeah, yeah. It's a tricky one, isn't it?
Because you get the picture.
Yeah, like we said, Doohan is kind of one of those ones where you think probably I would say he's probably on like a par or like a Zhou Guanyu or something like that of deserves a couple of years. I'd still always argue that Zhou probably got 1 year too many in the end, to be completely honest.
Probably.
But you're kind of there going, I think ultimately the other big question as well, of course, again, and it goes back to the way Alpine managed this all, is he didn't win Formula 2. Why did he take a year out? Like, surely they would have been better off keeping him in Formula 2 another year if you want him in Formula 1. And
what
kind
did
of
he even
just, you
do
know,
in 2024?
He was just a reserve driver, tested reserve. Yeah. So it's kind of that thing of you're better off if you're an Alpine. You know you want to be putting him in a Formula 1 gig at some point.
I guess
spend the couple of million quid. Yeah, but spend the extra couple of million quid just to try and keep him ready and fresh. And then at least then if someone else is doing better in Formula 2, you bring them in instead.
Yeah.
It's just, again, Alpine's bizarre way of managing drivers.
Yeah. Yeah. But I personally think C or D for both.
I feel like they need to go in C. Because, again, I feel like if we're looking at this tier list, we haven't got like an F or anything like that.
No, true.
Mazepin shows how bad a rookie can be still. I think he will be the benchmark for a long time. Exactly. Exactly. So we'll put Jack Doohan down in C tier then. And obviously we've already spoken a bit about Franco Colapinto, haven't we? Which I believe I've only now just realised isn't on this tier list. So
fantastic.
We're going to say Carlos Sainz is Franco Colapinto.
They look a bit alike.
For the sake of conversation. again, he's kind of just been very, very similar to Doohan, hasn't he? But at least had some Flavio Briatore hype behind him coming in.
Yeah, which very quickly became Flavio Briatore hate, wasn't it? By about three races in. So.
Yes.
Yeah, what was his objectives were? Don't crash, score points.
Don't crash, score points.
I can't remember what the third one was.
Be close to Gasly, I'm pretty certain.
Yeah, and he's not really achieved any of those yet.
No.
So he's a perennial Q1 exiter at the moment.
Usually, yeah. I mean, when we take a look through, of course, Imola, binned it Q1. Pretty quiet race after that. Monaco, when did Gasly come? Gasly retired from Monaco, didn't he?
I think he was like 11th or something.
Yeah, he was doing better than Franco up to that point. Monaco again, just a bit of a quiet weekend. He lost kind of a lot of the confidence he had in the car. Spain stalled in the pit lane. We still don't really quite know how he did that or whether it was his fault or the team's. Canada, he was actually looking pretty good. Outqualified Gasly. Did outrace him as well. So that was kind of a bit of a flash of brilliance. Austria again. Well, apart from almost wiping out Oscar Piastri as well, who was obviously trying to battle for the win, again, was a pretty anomalous result. Silverstone, binned it in qualifying, didn't even start the race, whether
stalled
that was his fault
again.
Or the team again, we don't really know. Belgium P19, Hungary P18, which Hungary admittedly Gasly came 19th because the Alpine was terrible, but it's not been great, has it?
No.
With the exception of Canada, it's been pretty woeful.
And in that time, Gasly scored 13 points.
Yes.
To Colapinto's none. Like we were saying, Gasly is a good benchmark, but he's not like a world beater.
He's not impossible to beat, exactly. Yeah.
So the fact that neither of his teammates has really got that close to scoring points yet shows they're kind of both as anonymous as each other. I'd be surprised if Colapinto's still driving an F1 in 2026, if I'm honest. I don't think he's been great. I think the Williams cameo was the best he'll get, to be honest. And even then, he didn't beat Albon in either of his point scores, did he? So
No. Let's be fair. Exactly what's happened here has been a repeat of Nick DeFries.
Yeah. Apart from the DeFries bit against Latifi.
Well, yeah, but he's basically just been a carbon copy, hasn't he? You get a couple of good races at Williams, someone else picks you up, you do terribly.
Yeah.
Clearly Williams is just a nurturing environment.
Well, Williams at Monza and Baku, you just put the accelerator down, really, don't you? So, yeah. It's not great.
Yeah.
I don't think Colapinto's going to see out... Well, he will see out the season. I don't think he'll be driving that in 26.
I think, yeah, had Bottas wanted to make the move, he wouldn't be. But because Bottas doesn't want to, I think they've just got to keep him there and hope for something. But I mean, it then does raise the question, of course, of who then do you bring into Alpine? You got Mercedes power next year, so I think you're probably looking at someone that wants to take a bit of a punt. Could that be a Formula One driver? Are you going to have to get another rookie in for next year?
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Is he going to be a Paul Aaron? Is he going to potentially be like an Alex Dunn? Or I want it to be Leo Fornaroli. That's Fornaroli what I
good.
Want.
I think Dunn would be good as well. Yeah, the top of F2 is actually a little bit decent under the radar this year. So, I don't... I mean, Paul Aaron would be fine, but I don't think he's going to beat Gasly.
No.
Dunn
no.
or Fornaroli could, I think. There's a genuine argument there. I don't think they'd beat him straight away, but it might be a bit of a Bortoletto-Hulkenberg deal where it's close.
Yeah. I think the only way Dunn would get in is, of course, if McLaren and Mercedes with their weird partnership with each other, kind of, now Alpine would have Mercedes power. You know, whether that's a... You save a couple of million quid on these engines a year if you put him in. But obviously, we could poach him at any moment.
Yeah.
Fornaroli, like I said, I would love to see. Partly because I'm a Fornaroli fan, but partly because I'm getting very worried that, again, we're kind of going on a bit of a tangent here. But Fornaroli is fantastic of being great, but not fantastic of being, like, an absolute star. He's just very consistent. And it's easy to train a quick driver to be consistent than a consistent driver to be quick, which is where I feel Fornaroli might get a bit shot in the foot.
Yeah, we'll see. If not, any of the current grid? I mean, no one will really move, I don't think. Everyone's kind of nailed their colours to the mast for 2026, haven't they?
The only other one which we've mentioned before is Isaac Hadjar.
Or Liam Lawson. One of those, if they get binned off.
I can't see Lawson going
or
to
Sonoda.
Alpine, though.
Why not?
Or a Sonoda? Yeah, go
Bring
back
Sonoda
to Gasly.
Gasly back.
Exactly. Great partnership. Absolutely fantastic partnership. Are we saying Colapinto's better or worse than Doohan, Jamie? It's
I think the exact same.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other, isn't it?
If we're doing an official ranking, I think I would put Colapinto a smudge higher. But for the sake of tier list, they're both C.
Okay.
But I don't know about you.
So Franco Colapinto again is Carlos Sainz today, ladies and gentlemen. Just so if you're watching this on YouTube, you know what's
People
going on.
People skip straight to the end and get confused, aren't they?
Yeah, very confused, very confused. Are we just going up in reverse championship order, are we?
Yeah, so next is Oliver Behrmann.
Oliver Behrmann. He's Hulkenberg from last year, Jamie, so I expect you to rate him very highly.
Well, he's not been running second in a sprint race for half the race yet. Oh, that was the year before, sorry, 2023, wasn't it?
I say, that was 23, yeah.
Behrmann started off pretty well. And that's kind of it so far, which is really surprising. And there's been loads of flashes of speed, but not much consistency, which is kind of what we saw in F2 as well from Behrmann.
Only because Prema couldn't work out the car last year.
But even when they could, there were races where he just didn't do anything and he had no reliability problems. So I think, and to be fair, Helmut Marko said exactly the same thing. He's quick, but inconsistent. So it is getting done.
Which I think is a really unfair argument when you look at Behrmann's results this year.
Well, yeah. But then, yeah, the 4 11th places in a row was quite something. Between Canada to Belgium in such different races. He just finished 11th 4 times. Yeah. I think Behrmann's had a good rookie season, but he's certainly not been the best of the rookies, I wouldn't say.
I think the problem is with Behrmann, isn't it? He's, like we said, 8th place in Shanghai was going to be 11th, I believe, obviously having not had those 3 DSQs. Or might have been 10th, actually, because I think he was still ahead of Gasly.
I think he was ahead of Gasly anyway, yeah.
Yeah. And then obviously 10th in Japan, 10th in Bahrain. Bahrain, a great recovery drive from the rear of the field. You'd think on paper since then he hasn't scored points, which is pretty bad going. Apart from a sprint. But you kind of look at his results and go, 13th in Jeddah, Haas just weren't that great that weekend. I can't remember what happened in Miami, why he retired. I think it might have been mechanical, if I'm not mistaken.
That's a great question.
Yeah, 17th in Imola was a bit of a bad one for him. 12th in Monaco, again, Haas have never historically been very good there. And I believe Ocon came 7th, but of course he's rapid at Monaco.
It was mechanical.
We don't like to admit it with Esteban Ocon, but he is very good at Monaco.
He is.
17th again in Spain, a bit unlucky. And like you said then, those four 11th places in a row. If he'd done this the year before, he'd probably be, or in 2023 especially, he'd probably be like up in 12th in the championship. The fact he's down in 19th is actually a bit unlucky.
It is.
But of course, it does then bring us back to the question, doesn't it, of is Haas a great place for rookies?
Well, it's not a bad place, is it?
Is like, it, though? You look back through their rookie history. You had Gutierrez, never scored a point. Obviously, Schumacher and Mazepin.
He also wasn't a rookie.
Gutierrez, no. But he had a couple of years out.
He did 2 years with Sauber, didn't he?
And then Sauber, yeah.
1 year out, yeah. I don't know. I mean, if you're a rookie, I think Haas have just chosen bad rookies in the past, but Oliver Behrman's doing fine, I think.
It's just a really odd one, isn't it, with Ollie Bearman? Because I feel like he doesn't deserve to be down in 19th.
And if you look at, Ocon's up in 10th. I wouldn't say Ocon has been 9 positions better than Bearman this year. Because head-to-head is 8-6 to Ocon.
Yeah.
So it's pretty close. Behrman's quality pace is definitely better than his race pace, which you kind of see with most of the rookies, to be honest. He has been unlucky. He did set a record. Did you hear about Crofty's record that he was harping on the night spa?
He equaled a record, didn't he? Yeah, that 4th, 11th place in a row.
The most consecutive positions finished without
same
it
position
being first.
Finished. Yeah, without it being a win. 4 in a row. Which is a staggering record, isn't it, when you think about it? Like we said, just the fact he keeps rocking up an 11th.
And he was going to finish 11th in Hungary, too, if he didn't have the mechanical.
Yeah, exactly. He's one of those weird ones, isn't it, with Behrman, where I think there was so much hype coming in, and it's kind of one of those ones where you think, well, he hasn't lived up to that hype, but you also can't really say he hasn't, either, in a weird way.
He's not been terrible, but he's unlucky the other rookies are good. Imagine if it was just doing Colapinto and Behrman on the grid. People would be like, oh, Behrman's awesome, he's great. And to be fair to him, he's 20 now, isn't he? So he's very inexperienced. Compared to the likes of Colapinto. He did 1 year of F2. Not Colapinto, the other one, Bortoleto.
No, he did 2 years of F2.
Behrman?
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure he did 23 and 24, if I remember correctly.
He should be doing much better then.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's been okay, but hasn't pulled up any trees yet. But he's going to be an F1 for a long time.
I think he's one of those ones, isn't it, where he needs to kick on next year with the new regs. If he can kick on next year, you know, kind of take this first year as you would to learn. And then kind of next year really, you know, start beating up on in head-to-heads, outscoring him reliably, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
But I think Ferrari still see him as a future. And he's got another year to prove that, hasn't he?
And if Hamilton quit tomorrow, they'd probably go Sainz or Behrman, to be honest.
Yeah. I think so still. Where are we going to put him in our tier list, Jamie? I think he's been a solid B, hasn't he?
I would go B. B for Bear, exactly.
B for Behrman, exactly. Exactly. Just such a weird one to try and describe, isn't it, with Behrman this year?
Yeah.
You always kind of feel like you're either being too harsh or overhyping him still.
He's probably being harsh on himself, I'd imagine.
Probably, yeah. You'd think down in P19... you know, just a couple of those results go a different way. He's immediately up to, like, P16 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then he's not that far behind Ocon as well. There's also been a lot of races where Ocon has just, like, say, you'd think Shanghai, of course, getting those 3 freebies and that kind of thing.
Yeah, finishing
or 2 freebies, wasn't it?
Yeah. How to do that.
Exactly. Gabriel Bortoleto then, Jamie. Of course, Fernando Alonso was recently once again accused of the media of being biased against the guy. but we both quite like him, I think. Am
Has the media been biased against him? I think the media's been absolutely fine with Bortoleto, to be honest.
This is what I don't understand. Fernando Alonso was like, oh, if he was British, that result at Hungary, people would be throwing him a parade. Not like everybody kind of was basically throwing Hülkenberg a parade. Exactly. It's just Alonso with his axe to grind still is at this point.
Exactly. I think Bortoleto, he had a slow start too, but the Sauber was a terrible car up until
Exactly.
So you can't really blame him for having no points when the car, like, because Hülkenberg only scored points once before Spain, and that was experience merchanting in Australia. So
Yeah.
I think he was doing okay, but under the radar massively, because no one could tell how
he was also like qualifying Hülkenberg quite a lot.
Only more recently.
It was early on in the season as well. Hülkenberg kind of fought back a bit at the midway point.
I know Bortoleto definitely did at Australia. That was disappointing. but yes, I think since the Spain upgrade, he's been doing really well. And Sauber on a points run of 7 races now since Spain. How many? 6 races,
did they score? Yeah, I thought they didn't score in one of those.
No, they have. They scored in every race since then.
Did they score in Canada, did they?
Yeah, Holt got a P8.
Holt got 8, yeah, didn't he? Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, so Bortoleto is, spoilers, right now my rookie of the year.
Interesting.
That's not just because I'm glazing Hülkenberg to be better than he is. Bortoleto is doing phenomenally well since that upgrade, and I think, yeah, it's been really nice to see. He's had a couple of, one best of the rest in Hungary. He got very nearly best of the rest in Austria.
Alonso beat him in Hungary.
Oh, true. And Alonso beat him in Austria too. That's annoying. he hasn't had any best of the rest. I changed my whole mind. He's terrible.
There you go. Alonso is rookie of the year, according to JB183.
Yeah, but I do think he's doing very well. He's beating Hülkenberg 8-6 in qualifying. Hülkenberg's not lost a quali head-to-head since he was up against Ricciardo in 2019. And Ricciardo was actually good back then.
Yeah, still well-rated in 2019. I think the big thing for Bortoleto as well this year is this season was basically about showcasing to Sauber why Audi should keep him on the books for next year.
Exactly.
And I think he has absolutely done that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think the kind of the overarching thing still is Australia and Silverstone, those two DNFs, both of which I believe were his fault, if I remember correctly.
Silverstone definitely was.
Again, Australia, you're kind of like going, yeah, first race, everything like that. Pretty much all the rookies made mistakes. Silverstone was a bit more clumsy, especially when you kind of think what the result could have been there.
And he was on a wet track, but then so
it's
was
a rookie
Russell
mistake.
Leclerc, so.
He's a rookie. He's allowed to make those this
exactly.
year. I think it's kind of still dependent on what Sauber do towards the end of the year, doesn't it? But I think if he can maintain some of that momentum, get a few more points finishes, I can't see him getting dropped for next year. And he's kind of done similarly to what he did in Formula 2 last year, and kind of a bit what we're seeing with Fornaroli this year in Formula 2, of he gets the job done pretty reliably. Because he wasn't like the flashiest F2 champion or anything like that. In fact, I think probably his most memorable result was pretty much down to luck, wasn't it, at Monza last year?
Yeah.
Going last to first. But he's one of those drivers, he's like a proper quintessential Brazilian driver, isn't he? Where you can see the natural talent.
Yeah.
And I quite like that.
Yeah, I do like Bortoleto. And there's no chance he's getting dropped for next year, which is mission accomplished, really, because he was brought in as a stopgap to see if Audi would keep him.
Exactly.
I 100% think they will.
They should. If they don't, then we're gonna throw hands.
Yeah.
I assume where are you ranking him?
I want to put him in A. I think it's
you
want
to put him in A. Okay. I can agree to that at the moment. He has been very, very good. I think as well, especially when it was kind of obviously Antonelli and Behrmann were so hyped last year. Obviously, he beat them both in Formula 2. Again, potentially helped a little bit by the fact Prema now aren't a good Formula 2 team anymore for some reason. But has proven once again that he is very, very capable behind the wheel. 17th currently in the standings. Next up then, Jamie, is Liam Lawson. And we've got to be careful that we don't let recency bias get in the way here. But he finally is starting to showcase a bit of what we all thought made Liam Lawson great everywhere else he's been.
Yeah, he's doing very well recently. And we won't let recency bias affect our ranking, because those two races at Red Bull were horrendous.
Yep.
And he qualified last twice, or was it 19th and 20th? It was.
He had an average qualifying position, I believe, of 19.66, including the sprint. So I believe it was two last and a 19th.
Yeah, which is the worst Red Bull record ever in 20 years of Red Bull. Even worse than, like, Robert Doornbos in 2005. So, he obviously had a terrible start. And then when he got dropped in at V-Carb, he also wasn't very good for
a number of races. We were nervous for quite a while, weren't we?
Yeah.
He was kind of, Hadjar was comfortably getting the better of him, and you think, that's probably time up then, buddy. That's a bit of a
exactly.
shame.
Especially with Arvid Lindblad doing quite well in F2. Like, if he was to come into the Red Bull family, you'd think Lawson was the bottom of the pile to get binned.
Yeah.
But to be fair to him, I would say Monaco was a bit of a turning point where he was at massively
V-Carb
able to help out.
V-Carb were just very good that weekend, weren't
they? They were. And they nailed the strategy. They were the first to do the stupid two-stop strategy where you just block everyone. But Lawson played his part in that. And then since then, like, Austria, sixth place, was kind of out of nowhere. He was the quickest Red Bull, wasn't he? Because Max was out in lap one. And then
he also qualified him, didn't he?
He did.
Or was he just behind him in the end? Yeah.
Britain, he was taken out at lap one. I still don't think it was his fault. He was on the outside of a three wide in Vale. In the loop, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. He was unlucky there, was it? You could kind of go, well, who else's fault was it? It was a lap one racing incident, wasn't it, really?
Well, whoever sent it down the inside was with no consequences.
Well, yeah.
And then 2 8th places in a row at Belgium and Hungary in very different tracks as well. And Hadjar hasn't scored points in a GP since Spain. Since then, Lawson's got effectively all his points. Or in fact, he has got all of his points in that time.
Apart from Monaco.
He's 2 points behind Hadjar now, who was getting a lot of hype early season, and that has kind of gone off the boil a little bit for Hadjar. But Lawson, it's hard because, it was such a bad start. But he has really turned it around and shown a lot of resilience.
No, exactly. And I think, again, it goes to show just how... because apparently the V-Carb is the easiest car to drive. So I think, of course, especially if you've come out of a rocky situation in that Red Bull, which is not an easy car to drive, it is going to take you a few races to get up to speed to kind of work out how much you can push this car, because there is going to be kind of that natural worry. Because I think had he come back to V-Carb, crash a few more times, it'd be, goodbye, thank you, sir.
Yeah, exactly.
we'll bring Arvid Lindblad in now. But apparently, of course, he's... rumoured to be looking at signing another deal ready for next year. I think, again, I know we've said it before, but both V-Carb drivers should be looking elsewhere, because I think they, again, could probably have careers similar to a Pierre Gasly, where
they could
stick around the sport for quite a while. And again, it's that whole thing with Lawson, where he's won in everything else he's ever been in. I'm not convinced we're going to see that in Formula 1, because, of course, it is very, very different to any other motorsport series, but you're kind of there going... there's clearly something there. It just needs to be extracted still.
Exactly. I like Lawson. I think he's got a good personality. Doesn't help him go any quicker, but I think he's funny. I think he'll be on the grid for a while, because he has, especially with his reputation, kind of getting better again now. The thing is with both of the V-Carb drivers, is they're in a bit of a John McVerne, Daniel Ricciardo situation back in 2012-13. They can see that there's going to be opportunities at Red Bull opening up pretty soon. Because Verstappen will be at 26. I don't think Verstappen will be at 27. So if you want a shot at the Red Bull, which maybe they don't, especially Lawson, maybe doesn't. But if Verstappen leaves, I still think Red Bull would promote from within. And you've got to prove that you're the better of the two options. Because Tsunoda's not going to be there realistically, is he, in 26? I think Hadjar will probably get that gig. But then Lawson can just stick around one more year, hopefully for his sake, pocket Arvid Lindblad, and then drive for Red Bull in 27.
Well, I think the other big thing as well, of course, which you're not sure about at the moment, is we're assuming Red Bull is still going to be a front-running team in 26-20. It
but
might
probably
well be
that
finishing 8th place in a race is actually fairly good going for Red Bull.
They'll probably be better than V-Cup still.
You'd hope so.
So it is an upgrade. Whether it's an upgrade from 9th in the championship to 7th in the championship, we'll wait and see.
Yeah, it is a very, very weird one. Again, like we've said, I think both of those drivers should be trying to look elsewhere. But again, you're kind of looking elsewhere going, are there that many opportunities at the moment?
Yeah, Alpine, do you think we'll go there?
I think with Mercedes Power next year, it could be...
possibly.
...a pretty decent... Oh, like I said, I think Isaac Hadjar there would be quite cool to see.
Would you rather be managed by Helmut Marko or Flavio Briatore?
Flavio Briatore, yeah. It's a pretty a rock and a hard place, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, Lawson, though, again, like we said, he's we don't want to get too caught up in recency bias, but he is starting to show some of kind of what we expected him to be.
Yeah. He's been better than the Alpine
finishes this year. Up against Hadjal's 5 points finishes this year, 2 points behind him. Again, I feel like Hadjal has been more consistent. And obviously, we'll talk about him a lot more.
Much better in qualifying as well.
Hadjal, yeah, he's rapid in qualifying. Where are we going to rank Lawson then, Jamie? I feel like he belongs ahead of the Alpines, but lower than Behrmann? Or is
I
that
would
too
agree.
Harsh?
No, I think I agree with you.
That's always reassuring.
Yeah.
Always reassuring.
But it's close. I think Behrmann and Lawson, there's not much to choose between them.
No, no,
Hadjar,
exactly.
Hadjar, we could probably spoke about him quite a lot already. He's yet to be eliminated in Q1, which is mental. He's the only driver. I think it's Leclerc and the McLarens, isn't it? And Verstappen and Hadjar.
Yeah, that haven't gone out in Q1.
Yeah.
At any point. Yeah, no, it is. It is staggering, isn't it? And I think, you know, the big thing as well with Hadjar, of course, is, you know, we will happily admit as well, I think, like, basically everybody else, we didn't have much hyper expectation for him coming into this season. You know, he wasn't announced to be a Red Bull nowadays, Minardi. he wasn't announced, you know, towards the end of last season, F2. It was after F2 last year. You know, it wasn't kind of a big Red Bull desperately want to get him in, get him ready for this year. It was kind of a, oh, right, yeah, I guess we'll put him in.
Yeah, he was the
he's kind of our best looking rookie.
He was a consequence of Perez getting sacked, wasn't he?
Yeah, basically. But he's done... I really like the guy as well this year. He's done fantastically. I really think he's a great personality to have around the grid as well. Which, of course, yeah, doesn't matter too much. Look at Daniel Ricciardo. but he's also delivering, which Daniel Ricciardo wasn't doing down at B-Cup that much. He's easily been the surprise of the year so far, hasn't he?
Yeah, and going into the year, I think we both said that we didn't particularly like him very much. He seemed a bit arrogant in F2, but I guess you only hear what he says on the radio, which does come across arrogant sometimes. But when you actually, see the human side of him...
He's a very nice guy.
He's a very lovely lad, yeah.
And very lovely lad, said by Isaac Hadjar's grandmother.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's, what, 19? How old is he? 23? 20?
No, he's a bit young, that, isn't he? Yeah, 20.
He's 20. So, yeah, 5 years older. That's crazy. But he has got a little bit off the boil. Up until Spain, absolutely was rookie of the year. But for me, I think Bortoleto has spun the stock quite a lot.
Bortoleto or Lawson?
Well, for me, Bortoleto is now my rookie of the year, as I said. But
okay,
rookie of the first half.
Yep.
But yeah, he does need to get back on it. But I do think probably an A is fair enough because he has been pocketing Lawson. He's the only rookie to be beating his teammate. Which I know is a caveat because his teammate
is also
a rookie.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes that a little bit awkward. So you're saying he's just below Bortoleto, are you?
I think that. I don't know what you think.
Okay. Fair. Yeah, no, I think that. I think that's fair enough. Again, it's kind of... Bortoleto probably came in arguably an even tougher scenario. I think, you kind of look at his recent results and think Belgium was a bit unlucky. Because, of course, after he got a bit shafted on strategy because the team, I believe, called him in as he went past the pit lane. That put him at the back, and then no one could do anything for the rest of the race. P11 at Hungary as well. Yeah. So you kind of think, obviously, Silverstone, again, bit of an error. But again, we've seen basically all the rookies beat it in the wet races so far, haven't we?
A wet race, you can guarantee there's 14 finishers, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And that does lead us on to our last rookie, Jamie, who, admittedly, unlike all the others, shouldn't have binned it in either wet race. Or one wet race he didn't bin it, and the other one he got taken out.
Yeah, by Hadjar. So Antonelli, he's been very good in flashes, hasn't he? He's a quintessential rookie season for Antonelli, I think.
He's been unlucky as well.
He has been.
I really like him.
I like Antonelli a lot. He's obviously, is he 19 yet or is he still 18?
He's 18. I believe
he's 19
still.
Before
he might be
19.
Race. Yeah, he's 19 like in 2 weeks or something.
But he's been started the season incredibly well, but then went on a run of 1 points finish in 7, which wasn't too clever. That was a podium finish.
It was a podium finish, and when you look through those results, was Imola car failure, Monaco.
No, he crashed. Well, he had a terrible race in Imola.
But he still had a car failure. He was going to come like 10th.
He was going to come out the
which
points,
is not
he?
Great. I think he was closing in on points, if I remember correctly.
But yeah, he basically got all his schoolmates along and then got distracted, and that didn't go down too well with Mercedes.
Imola car failure. Monaco, they were pretty terrible as a team, but he got a bit screwed over as well.
And he was very slow in qualifying. Yeah.
Yeah, we binned it in qualifying, which cost him. Spain, car failure. Canada, podium. Austria, rookie error, like we said at the time, took out Verstappen. Silverstone got wiped out. Belgium, again, got completely screwed over on strategy after a bad qualifying.
But again, some of that, just qualify better, and then you not be in those situations. But I'm being harsh because he's got very high standards.
You are, because you know I like him.
But I do. He has been good. I'm not saying he's been bad, but he has not quite lived up to the hype. It's not been a Lewis Hamilton rookie season, has it?
No, but I also, again, I think when you see these rookies come in, I think it gives everybody another kind of appreciation for just how ridiculous Lewis was in his rookie year.
And how overly prepared he was.
I can also hear the Fernando Alonso fans going, oh, when he did all this testing and this, that and the other, testing doesn't prepare you for the emotion and the adrenaline still. He's going up against a George Russell that's very well embedded in that team.
Yeah.
And you look through, Bahrain, he got absolutely shafted on strategy as well. And we spoke about all the other times he hasn't scored points. I mean, 4-6 places in a row in 5 races early on after that 4th place brilliant result in Australia. Again, it's very, very easy to look at kind of how bad it's gone recently. I mean, he scored a point in Hungary. But
his confidence
Mercedes
in Belgium was in the floor. It was very, very low. I think Antonelli's been good. I think he's probably got the highest ceiling out of any of the rookies still.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Just because he's the youngest and already in a Mercedes, already a podium finisher.
And the thing is, I would have thought as well, coming into this season, Mercedes would have said to him, look, apart from if we get any surprises further down the order, as long as you finish ahead of the midfield runners, that's good enough.
Exactly.
Like, Mercedes probably should be a comfortable second in the constructors. But let's be fair, they don't care if they finish second or third in the constructors. Unless they're winning it, it doesn't matter. He's still 10 points ahead of Albon. Yeah, but I would have thought that gap will probably go up because Albon, to be fair to him, he scored points in Silverstone and Belgium. But recently, aside from that, 3 DNFs in a row and a 15th at the Hungaro Ring. Williams have obviously gone to a lot more circuits where they've struggled.
And are focused on next year already, so we'll see.
Exactly. Antonelli is one of those weird ones, isn't it, where out of the rookies, he's definitely still had the highest highs. Obviously, that pole in Miami, that podium at Canada as well. He's also had, obviously, apart from Lawson in those couple of races going up against Max, had the toughest teammate to go up against as well. I still really, really rate him. I know you don't as much.
Well, I do rate him, but I think judging the first half of the season, he's not been better than Borsletto or Hadjar. I don't think.
I still struggle to agree.
But
I think he's had, like I said,
numbers.
He's had worst lows. But of course, then you look at Bortoletti, he binned it at turn one in Shanghai, but it was okay because the car was bad.
Did he? I don't remember that.
Both Saubers binned it lap one in Shanghai.
Oh, yes. They? Yeah, true. I don't know. I feel like,
I think Bortoletti and Hadjar have been bigger surprises. But that's different in my mind.
I just don't think Antonelli's been better than either of them.
Purely, but again, my point again is you look at things like, obviously, Australia finished well. P4, first ever race, showed great instinct. And those battles late on, some of those overtakes were fantastic. Would have finished Silverstone as well had not Hadjar not wiped him out. He would have been the only rookie to finish either of those races, and he would have finished both of them. I think there's still an element of, considering he's the youngest one coming in with the least car racing experience, I still think he's done the best of the bunch. I want to say.
Okay. Well, we'll agree to disagree.
I feel like. where are we putting him then?
It's up to you. I would put him third, personally. I'd put him A, but I'd put him behind the two.
You'd still put him behind Hadjar and Bortoletto?
I would, yeah. I think those two have had a better first half of the season.
I will agree to put him behind Bortoletto, but we're saying similar to Colapinto and Doohan, they're basically identical.
Okay, fair enough.
Is that
fair? That does lead us onto a quiz very quickly, because we've not got long. But he is obviously an Italian podium finisher.
Yep.
Do you know who the last two were?
Fisichella?
Yes.
I'm pretty certain.
And the other one, similar era to Fisichella.
Jarno Trulli, I would assume.
There you go. They are the two drivers who this quiz is about. Because between them, they race a lot of races. And they race for 10 Formula 1 teams. Some of them are the same team rebadged.
Okay.
But you've got a minute to name the 10 teams raced.
So have I got to name
Trulli.
The rebadging? Or
yes.
Oh, good.
And your
Lord.
Time starts now.
Ferrari, Toyota, yes. Renault, Benetton, Jordan.
Well, you got five already. That's a good start.
Good heavens. Yeah, I smashed five out far too early. where else are you? BMW? No, I don't think so.
No.
Don't think either of them race for Jaguar or anything like that. Nor like Red Bull or anything like that. Jordan. Fizzy didn't race after 09. I don't think Trulli. No, Trulli did race after 09. Like Caterham or Virgin or HRT, I'm going to say.
Close. Not quite there.
Marussia?
No.
Manor?
No.
Lotus Caterham?
Yeah, you got Lotus. There you go. Yeah. 10 seconds. You've absolutely flopped this in the second half.
Oh, I got the five really. I knew, yeah. Exactly, yeah. No idea. If I wasn't under time constraint, I would be able to get them.
I mean, there's one you should absolutely have got, because Fizzy raced the majority of his season in 09 for Force India.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to just completely forgot to mention them.
then the other's Sauber. I think both of them raced for Sauber at some point.
Yeah, Fizzy, that was, again, another did. One in the early 2000s.
Trulli raced for Prost, which was quite difficult.
Yes, should have known that.
And then I think Fizzy started his career with Minardi. So
I was going to say Minardi, but I just backed out of it for some reason because I'm an idiot. Fair enough. I'll take that. 6 out of 10 is not bad.
6 out of 10. 60%.
Exactly.
Run through the tier list for our Spotify.
Yes. Yeah. So Gabriel Bortoleto, we are controversially saying, is our rookie of the season so far. Although we're gonna call that a tie between him and Andrea Kimi Antonelli.
Yeah, we disagree. I think Bortoleto, Matt thinks Antonelli. There you go.
Exactly. Isaac Hadjar comes a close third place. Ollie Bearman in fourth. Again, flashes of brilliance, but still needs a little bit more. I get that Haas probably has arguably now been the worst car on average over the course of the season. Apart from the Alpine.
Yeah.
Liam Lawson, potential to move up our rankings. But of course, I think probably came in with arguably the most expectation behind him. And then down at the bottom in the doldrums, Franco Colapinto and Jack Doohan, both pretty terrible. Neither of them, I think, will probably see on the grid after this year, unless something wild happens.
Exactly.
Leave us questions for our Q&A as well, because hopefully we won't get like three questions in an 8-minute podcast or something.
Yeah, that'd
like
be a
that,
shame.
That we've got to waffle on about. Jamie, have we got anything else to add?
No, I don't think so. No. Actually, I ordered some artwork this week that I've got.
Okay.
I'm going to show the viewers at home. You'll have to watch it in the edit.
I'll have to watch it back.
There's a
wonderful. Nice it looks little... fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
I can't see it. I've got no idea. Guess, yeah. It's going to be Hulkenberg. Jamie's got Hulkenberg tattoo on his stomach.
Yeah, I just pulled up my shirt on the camera. Thankfully, that did not happen. It is a Hulkenberg-related piece of art, though, so there you go.
Of course it is.
Etsy sorted me out.
Nice. Nice. Love that. Yeah,
probably fake and stolen, but we move.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm producing a Chinese warehouse by a 6-year-old child, but there we are. That's as long as Jamie's studio looks good, that's all that matters. Thank you all, as always, so much for watching. If you have enjoyed, please do make sure you leave a like. Get yourself subscribed. And yeah, Jamie and I guess we'll be back at some point, maybe this week, probably next week, with another podcast.